So did I hear people recognizing that first reading, as we know there are no knowns? Who said that? Rumsfeld. He said that about 3 years ago. I was surprised it was that long ago. Who was he quoting? Paraphrasing. Confucius. Yes. Rumsfeld was razzed a lot for spouting nonsense, but, you know, I did agree with him. There are things we know and things we don't know, and some of them we know about and some of them we don't. Confucius was born in 551 BC, and he wrote, "You know what you know, and you don't know what you don't know. That is knowledge. But we live in a state of lies and propaganda in which you know what you know, you think that you know what you actually don't know, and you even think that you know what you don't know that you don't know. That is not knowledge." Confucius was a man born to poverty, but he made his way into posterity as a teacher. He believed that education and the ways of living well were as important as learning objective facts. We talk about this being an information age. We live in a knowledge economy. Yet are we better schooled than folks in previous times? What do we mean by schooling, anyway? Our word of the month in our language of reverence is epistemology, the study of knowledge. Epistemology considers questions like, what is knowledge, and how do we know what we know? One might think that you go to school to learn, to be educated. But I'd like to suggest there are as many ways and kinds of learning as there are places to learn. The material, the facts, one learns at school or university is only one kind of learning. I'm thinking that there are many more important kinds of learning. I'm thinking about learning how to get along with others, how to have compassion and empathy for others, how to respond emotionally and appropriately. Most of that learning comes not in lectures, but in the living and working our way through these experiences. The next question, given that this is a church after all, is how do we learn about our religion? It's true, we do need to be told about some things like history and other background of who we are, where we've come from. It's good to know that Michael Servetus was a heretic who was burned at the stake in 1553 for insisting that there was one God, not a Trinity. I think that we need to learn what a genuine religious experience is so as to recognize one when we have it. A good way to do this is to hear each other's stories, perhaps in a chalice circle. You need a chance to hear your own story as well. But I believe that no one can tell you exactly what your religious experiences are or what they should mean to you. I also believe that such understanding is an ongoing process, that revelation is not sealed, for we continue to better understand that which we experience as we go along. Not quite a year ago, those of us involved in the children's program got together to talk about what we envisioned for it. First, we changed the name from religious education to religious exploration. I think we were trying to reflect that we are not in the business of training anyone what to think, but encouraging us all to think broadly about what we want our children and ourselves to be doing about religion, that is, exploring. We want to know more than facts. We want to consider various sides of things before coming to any judgment. The poet John Keats wrote, "Do you not see how necessary a world of pains and troubles is to school an intelligence and make it a soul? A place where the heart must feel and suffer in a thousand diverse ways." According to Keats, learning to live in the world is the way to become a soul, to become whole. Learning to live in the world. The struggles we make our way through determine our character, and so our individuality is formed. It's interesting to compare how different people respond to similar situations. Two men of my acquaintance, both now deceased, each lost their fathers at a young age, about 7. Each was the eldest child of several, and so became the man of the family at a tender age. One was able to take it in his stride and get on with his life. The other was embittered, feeling cheated of his childhood, even into his old age. Our experience does shape us, but our responses to those experiences are just as important. No one wishes such a challenge for a child. Yet we want our children to learn things, and especially how to live well in the world, schooling their intelligence, we want to do it. We want them to know how the world works, how to be both a conscious and conscientious citizen. We want our children and ourselves to be confident explorers of our world. Our religious exploration visioning group said in more detail, we want our religious exploration program to provide opportunities for dialogue, to initiate opportunities to develop and explore spirituality, to connect ages, philosophies, and backgrounds, to empower individuals, to study and learn together, to learn about conflict management, to include all present gifts and teach new skills, to celebrate and mark milestones like we did with our joys and sorrows, to make room and provide information for newcomers. There are several aspects of learning that we try to help our children and ourselves become aware of. Compassion for others, sharing stuff, understanding the systems we live in and with, and understanding how others live. The Heifer Project that Joy referred to earlier, that the children are now engaging in, for instance, helps them learn about how people in the developing world live, to have compassion for them, and to learn how much the simple addition of a pig or a cow can add to their livelihood. An understanding of how world trade practices affect the lives of these same folks is what we as adults need to understand and make sure our members of parliament know about and care about. We continue to deepen our understanding as we experience life. A simple chat with someone in the hospital or in some difficult situation can give us new insight. Even reading in the paper yesterday about the life of Sam Sullivan, Vancouver's quadriplegic mayoralty candidate, gives a story of how one can learn to deal with life's difficulties. It's not always quick or easy. We continue to learn. Part of what we need to continue discovering is how to be in relationship with each other. Some relationships are more intimate, as in our families. Other relationships, like the neighbors, the kids at school, the people we work with, the folks at church, are not so. A big part of being human is being in relationship, and I'm not sure that we ever truly master it. We learn so much from the people around us, like how does one treat the others in a family? Do you acknowledge the kid on the street looking for a handout, or do you whisk by without glancing? Do your children see you being neighborly, chatting with the folks next door occasionally? I think my father is my role model for that. He has the neatest job. At the age of 80, he is his township's eyes on who lives where. He doesn't do any assessing of the property values. He just reports who lives where so it can be done. I think he gets a dollar a name. But he has a valid excuse for knocking on the door and chatting with his neighbors, something he enjoys more than anything else in the world. He catches up on the news and figures out whether this person is related to anyone he knows, and he's lived in the same township almost all his life. You know, his great-grandfather moved there. I thought of him yesterday as I took a few minutes to chat with my neighbors at their yard sale. The only thing I needed, a coffee pot, they didn't have. But I often wave to them as Bill takes his daughter to school. But yesterday, I had the opportunity to actually say hello and meet their next-door neighbor. I'm still learning how to meet people with the ease that my father does, but he's been my model. Parents matter so much as role models. Another thing I learned from him was how to live in an old house. The house he now lives in was built in the same decade ours was, in the 20s. Other houses we lived in as a child were 50 or 100 years older than that. He was always puttering at some job around the house, so I've learned the job of always puttering. I hope that telling you that learning lasts a lifetime seems a bit trite. Well, of course learning lasts a lifetime. We're always learning something. You can't ever know everything, and things keep changing. Anyway. Yet I wonder how it is that we put the brakes on learning or learn with less enthusiasm. What kinds of obstacles do we face? I know that I don't really look forward to new software, new gadgets like the MP3 player recorder I just bought. I don't like the learning curve. I just want it to work. I'm still learning how to deal with a difficult neighbor who doesn't respond the same way I would. I'm not sure that learning gets easier as I get older. But if I stopped learning, I know I would be up the creek without a paddle in no time. I wonder if we each have blind spots in the kinds of things we'll keep learning. What kind of effort do I need to expend to use this new technology that I wanted to get? Maybe it's how to make friends, even if the common grounds are not apparent at first. What kind of effort do I need to bring to bear on finding new friends now that I live in BC? And do I have the patience to wait for a friendship to bear fruit? Just because I play hockey with the same dozen women every week doesn't mean any of them are close friends yet. Have I even remembered to nurture the friendships I've had in previous places I've lived? I know I get too busy with my day-to-day life, and this new stuff, as well as the old stuff, gets put aside. Many of us yearn to have a fulfilling life, a meaningful life. Can you even define fulfilling or meaningful in this regard for you? I'd like to suggest we need to learn how to do these things and that this learning is a lifelong task. The answers may change. I want to close with a story from Turkey called Hide and Seek. A man renowned for his knowledge loved to converse with the wise men of Turkey. One day a boy was brought before him. "This child has great learning," he was told. "And who has he studied with?" The man was informed that the source of the child's wisdom was natural. Immediately the man questioned the child. The boy's answers were simple, elegant, beyond ordinary comprehension. Hungrily, the man continued his questioning. But the child got bored. "Let's play a game," he said. "You hide and I will find you." The man laughed. "It's better if you hide first and I will find you. After all, I am knowledgeable in 6 kinds of magic." "No, you go first," insisted the boy. The man snapped his fingers, disappeared, and entered another world. The boy sighed. "It's not fair. Come back. You're not supposed to hide in the other world." The man reappeared, and the boy vanished, leaping into the heart of the man. The man looked everywhere. He couldn't find the boy. "Where are you?" "I'm here." The boy's voice was near, but muffled. "I can't find you." So the boy reappeared, saying, "I was in your heart. If you do not look in your own heart first, then you will not find wisdom. So look to your own heart, dear friends. Listen to your own heart. Are you still learning as much as you need to?